what parts of you shall remain. I have ceased to be a German. I am an American. I have dropped a part of my nature as far as it goes. I have tried to exile it. I have rejected it. You all can and must reject a part of your American in order to insist on other parts that to you seem valid and valuable. Nobody, as I said before, can go without some selection. In this very moment, the world enters your nature. Your heresy, you see, the chemical heresy, Mr. Einstein's heresy, is that they think the universe exists without the world. It doesn't. You don't understand me. You think I'm just insane.
I know.
But so have all Jews and all Christians and all Greeks and all people who have ever believed in any god or deity or spirit been insane in your eyes. Because you just think that man is an animal. But you speak about being an animal, and no animal can say I'm an animal. Any man who says I am an animal knows what God is. Because God is the power to speak. That is the word. That is all. Because these fundamental texts, the ABC of human life, to you have become some chosen books which can arbitrarily discard. Do you think the New Testament, the Old Testament, can be arbitrarily discarded as denominational bias? They cannot. They are much more fundamental than any ABC or any mathematics. They're true. They are so simply true that you live by this. Your whole freedom, the whole independence, all your right of being a student in Dartmouth College, all your rights to be live in a democratic society depend on our conviction that you can appropriate the spirit of the institution in which you live by the power of the word. By saying, I am an American, we begin to trust you. That's democracy. Democracy means that any man is not just by the nature of things born into society, but he can, by rising to the spirit of the society, one day say, on my word, this is my society. And in saying so, the society begins to live to a certain amount from the spirit, and on the basis of the spirit you exhale. Because you are now giving back to this institution some of the spirit which has been imparted to you before. And you cease to be just a child of nature, and suddenly the word which you have freely chosen begins to carry the institution. And you are, instead of becoming a product of your environment, you become the creator of your environment, the recreator of your environment, by this strange volunteering for the affirmation. People today have, of course, you see, obliterated, they speak of conscious life. All right, you can also do this. Conscious life is a different kind of life from unconscious life. And human beings have to lead conscious life. This is just another form of saying they have to speak. Conscious life is not simply life, but that is the life into which you are destined. Therefore, you are not an animal. Because, sir, my body carries me into the power of speaking to you, of connecting the times and the places. I can build railroads, I can send telegrams, I can make speeches, I can print books. That is, I use my body, certainly my animal body, so that I may build up connections through time and space which no animal is not interested in. It is born, it dies to itself. You are not this way, animal. We are therefore not animals. Because anybody who says he is an animal is in the process of saying this divine. And so man is this strange mixture of divinity and animality. And you can't get out of this. Anybody who speaks is in this quandary. Because he speaks the truth, and the truth is valid for anybody who can hear to listen to you, or you can cheat, or you are alive, to either gods or the devils. There is no way out for you, gentlemen. You cannot live innocently in a refrigerator. You cannot live an antibiotic life at 35 degrees of Fahrenheit. That's all. Every American boy tries to do that. He tries to stay out of trouble by never saying anything, never sticking his neck out, always saying yes, 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 yes. Somebody says, then speaks for you. That's what I tried to put on the blackboard. I said you are ill. You see, you may make attempts to say I'm just an animal. I'm just
there are pigs and hogs and asinine people and everyone. But there's some devil who takes advantage of their votes. Whose henchman he is? You are the henchman of all the people whom you allow to speak for you. Because you want to have peace of mind, you allow them to make war. Here, once more, sir, as you are living today, at this moment, sitting here innocently and say, well, if you are animals, then you don't have to go into history. By saying this, you are abusing your power of speech, which all American boys at this moment do. No, 50 years ago, your grandfather would have blushed if anybody had doubted that he had a soul and that he had to live up to his soul's requirements. But you don't feel ashamed at all. You think that's very funny. And you think it's wonderful, it's intelligent even to call yourself an animal. Intelligent. Unfortunately, you see, you have lost your innocence because you have the power to say, I am an animal. And you can only say this if you know what God and man is. Because otherwise your sentence that you are an animal makes no sense. You fight off something by saying, I'm just an animal. Just gives you away. The word just gives you away as soon as you know of other categories of life. How do you know? Because you are not an animal. The only reason why you know it. Because you know for sure that the animal does not know what man and God is. Just look at the poor animal. It is bewitched. If you don't domesticate it, it is full of fear. Can't even sleep at night. Must stay away. But you can have such peace that you sleep deeply at night and are awake in the morning. The poor animals can only, so to speak, rest in daytime when the sun is out, and all day and night long they must fear their enemy. But they cannot make peace. They cannot speak. Everybody, you live, of course, on all these beliefs, but it is so, you are so uninterested, because you prefer to have this wonderful silky curtain drawn before your real existence and to daydream some philosophy which is so cheap, called whatever, this realism or material, I don't care, I mean, or psychology or something. And just look at some ridiculous, arbitrary selection of reality in yourself. But when it comes to choices and when your children will be ungrateful to you, you will be very much surprised what you have done to them because you haven't brought them up in any faith. Very much surprised. And when your friends betray you, when you go to a man and you ask him for a loan or you ask him to help out, you just take it for granted that he will. Why he should, you cannot explain if he's to an animal. Why he should. John Quincy Adams, when the slaves, you see, petitioned for freedom, he could have answered, they are just animals. But he said, the right of petition, which then the southern states, you see, wanted to gag in the Congress, cannot be denied. It is a natural right born with man's nature. Man's nature, it is to implore. It's a very great saying, to implore. No animal can go down on his knees and implore. Wonderful thing. The old gentleman, who certainly was a realistic and sober and very, very caustic man, not a very amiable man. You mustn't think that John Quincy Adams had any sweetness or light in him. Not at all. He was very drastic, very crude, you may say. But he knew one thing, that the gift of man, of imploring his fellow man, as his alter ego, as being just as much entitled to live, that this lifts men above the animal. And there is no law and no order and no government among people who recognize this, that they are not animals together, but they are under God forming a lawful order, in which therefore anybody who can listen also can speak. And because anybody exists, other nation exists, then are you, while speaking, already invite the agreement and consent of all the people who listen. And therefore you identify yourself with the whole tree of the human race. And that's why you know that the stirrer of your humanity started 6,000 years ago, and you have to be in agreement with the great direction of the stream of human life. And that no human, no animal is asked to know. But you have to know who your ancestors are. You have to know whether you can stem from Caliban or from Kosovo. It's your choice, sir. If you choose Caliban, he will kill you. I will be the first to vote for your immediate execution. If a man wants to be an animal, let him be it. Out he goes. You don't see that you forfeit your life by saying that man is an animal. I have no reason to let you live if you say you are an animal or and you say I am an animal. In both cases, the enmity is eternal. Animals have no friendship and solidarity. They cannot eat. They have to eat. And what I eat, you cannot eat. What you eat, I cannot eat. It's mutually exclusive. Ask the Arabs and the Israelis how they feel about each other. Because they think it's just the swine. One is a swine, the other is a son of a bitch. It's very serious, sir. The peace of the world depends on your, on what you think of yourself. You are not allowed to think arbitrarily about your own nature. Man has no nature. Man's destiny is to be built into the temple of humanity as one breath, living breath. And that's all. That's your destination. So you have no nature because your whole body and soul has to be used up, has to be remolded. You have to give up your nature. That's made with the sentence, he who doesn't lose his soul, you see, he cannot gain it. Why is it forbidden for men to look in the mirror? Why is it forbidden for us to be vain? Why is it forbidden for us to live purposively? Why do we have to be humble and free and open-minded? Because our destiny is always larger than the physical equipment which we have received at this moment. Why is any person greater who overcomes an obstacle and a handicap in his equipment? Why is a great singer a greater speaker because he was a stammerer? Because man has no nature. Your natural equipment does not determine what you are going to be. But the calling which you hear, the vocation, what's needed in the world. Do you think that Helen Keller has by nature any right to exist? Yet she has done more for humanity because she has overcome all her obstacles. Because her nature was just not there. She has no nature to speak of. But when I received a letter from her the other day about the blind, I sent to Mrs. Susie, where help can't be helped. It is Helen Keller who has signed this letter, and also I have no interest in the cause, I have to give her. Because she has set an example how to overcome her nature. Man begins where you would declare that your nature is good enough. And the animal begins where you say, that's all I have. Anybody who acquiesces in animal nature has given up the right to be defended in court. Why should animals be defended in court? They can be slaughtered. Pardon me?
I said they could be, but not just as good as man.
No, they cannot. Because they cannot render, you see, the same altruistic loyalty. They want to eat first. You have never seen an animal. Willingly share his food with somebody else.
Yes, I
don't do it. See?
I have.
Well, the kittens, as long as they're there, yet under the same mother. But not older. Impossible. Yeah?
Sir, I deny that you can base your entire thesis on the assumption that Christianity is an unassailable truth.
Well, I mean, my dear sir, certainly you want to believe with the apes in 5000 BC. I still believe that for the last 8,000 years we have found certain things to be true, as the Constitutional Fathers of the Declaration of Independence also believe. If you really think that we have to wait for you till you tell us what we have done and had to do for the last 7,000 years, I say, please, you're absolutely entitled to do this, but I make an accident, I kill you, you can't. You have no right to exist. You have no right. You have excluded yourself from the society in which you are entitled to tolerance and to listening, hearing, and to an opportunity. Opportunity is only within Israel. There is no opportunity in nature. This is so cheap. I mean, if a 10-year-old boy begins to say this, but that a 20-year-old man of your stature should really try to dream backward and say, I know nothing, I'm just ignorant. People at 14 formerly had already to make declarations of faith, and they knew what they were saying 200 years ago. But you just want not to know anything, so I rightfully don't know anything. But why should I respect this? Ignorance is not a title to respect, because you don't want to know.
I don't want to accept anything as the truth which I do not know.
But why you are trying to accept the truth, your own truth? I give you must know that you are living in the good faith and the tolerance of others. He gives you these 20 years to make up your own mind. Sir, you owe gratitude and loyalty to the people who give you these 20 years for your silliness and inanity. If you admit that at this moment you don't know, I'm perfectly happy then to admit that it is the graciousness of the historical humanity which says every apple shall ripen himself. And so we give you as the future apple a chance. And in this time you may say as what you please. You are unassailable in this position, to use your own expression. And you are unassailable. Only you live at the mercy of us. And this one sentence, thank you, gentlemen, that you allow me to be so stupid. You have to say it first. That is your real thing. You believe at this moment in humanity at large, which allows one of its members to be at this moment so sick. That is unassailable, sir. And this is enough to build a whole theology and a whole philosophy of this. If it is true, that you have to be allowed to make up your own mind for 25 long years, in which nothing what you say must be held against you, in which you can be as silly and inept and contradictory as you please, then this is a very wonderful society which puts tremendous faith in you as a human being, which thinks that man's spirit is so divine that after he has been allowed to wallow in the mire like a prodigal son, he'll become a saint and a hero and a leader of the community. As long as you keep all these doors open, if you understand the meaning of the freedom you enjoy at this moment, you're utterly entitled. But you cannot say that you have no freedom, and therefore the other fact of the matter that if we are under law to give you this freedom, just means this. If you admit that we are under law, in duty bound to allow you to be stupid, then we can begin talking. Because then you presuppose our religion, that we have to be religious while you can be frivolous. That's all right. As long as you see that we allow you to be frivolous and ridiculous, but that we have to be terribly serious to make sure that you have something to eat, and that you have friends, and that you have schooling, and that you have service and peace, and I'm shut there while you are making up your mind. If you see this, then you admit that we must have a religion. It is only this your religion. You want to have a better religion. And then the second point is that not only must we have a religion which secures your life, your existence, freedom, liberty, pursuit of happiness. That is must be our religion, you see, at this moment. But also, sir, now comes the theory. Whatever you find in your own 25 years to be true must not be less than this which now at this moment we find you. That is, your religion may be better than my religion, but it is not allowed to be worse. You cannot backslide before into a society in which all the children which a father did not like could be just murdered. She's thrown into the Egyptus as the Spartans did. You are already bound by my religion to factor through the task or through the responsibility that whatever you find to be true in the future must be better than what I have found. Under this condition, you're free. Absolutely free. You certainly can find anything better. But as soon as you say, I'm not bound at all, I can find that man is just an animal. I say, sorry. Out you go. Out you go. Because you have broken the covenant. You have broken the covenant under which you have been granted this freedom. You have abused it. This is the situation in which you are. God, I want you to be free, sir. But the conditions of this freedom are very clear. You cannot do less than we are doing for you. The society which you have to establish by your own needs has already certain minimum requirements. And they are unassailable, sir. Now, if you are so uneducated not to know that they are the Christian prerequisite of life, I don't quibble about the word. You call them American democracy. Well, American democracy is a secular translation of Christianity. So, I mean, if you are so ignorant, you see, that's a minor matter. You just don't know it. But the freedom that you have not to know is based on very precise conditions and premises. If you deny these premises from which it springs that you enjoy at this moment this freedom of saying, I know, I don't know, then you are have excommunicated yourself. As the caravans in America, they went around by the house, the people who take to the vectors, the people who say the side is not for me. There is a Swedish sculptor who has written a book, Caravan. It's in the library. I recommend it to you up here. You see, that is the real description. You aren't anything like this man, but he has taken the consequences which you, so to speak, talking and mentioning that nothing has been proved. He wants to find out all in by himself. So he abuses every woman and every man he meets in life. And he had even the guts to write this up. It's a tremendous, he calls it, he's a caravan. So he even knows that he lives because others are not caravan, because of course the man can only commit all his piracies and all his crimes against humanity, you see, because the others still assume that he must act as a human being, and he never does. The second already would get away with her, and the third be blessed. It's like a kidnapper. The first kidnapper gets away, and then you pass the kidnapping law. No, sir, this is, for a student, it's not much of a performance to say that this is unassailable. There are very clear conditions under which you can say that you do not believe in the truth of Christianity. If you analyze under which conditions it is permissible for you to say this, then you will see that you are already far advanced in history, in the history. You can only say this in the year of around 1950. And that 2000 BC you would have been burned and taught and caught for how do you say it? Quarter. Mm-hmm. Put in a bag and thrown into the river.
What time is it? Oh. Gentlemen, this is not what I was going to say at all. Perhaps in these 6-7 minutes I have left, I may connect this problem of beginning to think from the point where two generations meet into some great story in the of the Bible. Despite your remark, I hope you won't get issued with me on this. Anything important is only important when a listener and a speaker meet. Because only when at least two people become one will there be any effect in history, in reality level. Anything that is enshrined into your thought and never leaves the shrine of your
brain obviously cannot make much effect on zero. In some form it has to ooze out. And so I take as a minimum supply of energy in the universe of human history this meeting where one listener agrees to what a speaker says, and I took the father and the son as being the most simplest form of such a process, you see, of some point where the electric current of that goes through the human race is closed, is the negative and the positive pole are so brought together that the current can run through. And I advise you, gentlemen, this is really so simple. If you begin, instead of speaking of cooperation space of between people here and there, you see, you begin always to ask yourself how a truth that has been older than you is established and made to bear fruit by the simple fact that you hear. And then you begin to think how you want to influence your youngsters in a camp or in a Sunday school class or in your own family, a younger child, and how important it is that this child should understand and believe what you tell him. You will find that it is very fruitful to treat the listener and the hearer of the word spoken and heard as potential father and son, or potential ancestor and founder and heir and successor. They are the purer forms of hearing and listening than what we do here. You see, you are a little younger than I, and yet obviously in a teacher-student situation, this is a father-son situation. And I use the father-son situation because I think it seems to be the most recurrent, and in which all other situations of listening and hearing are contained. Any part of this country, you see, Washington, you see, is in this sense the speaker, the father, in one, unified, you see this. So I'm not meaning this in any sentimental sense, father and son, but I'm meaning it in this very logical, philosophical, abstract sense that the speaker is representing something that has already been known before, and the son is inheriting this truth, a younger man. I would say that if you should be teachers of a 50-year-old girl or woman, or man in some capacity of yours, you would be the older and he would be the younger. You would be the father and he the son. Whenever a man opens his mouth to convey knowledge or convey instructions, you see, or advice to another person, the listener is in the position of being younger and the speaker is in the position of being older, because both in the process of continuation, you see, of the spiritual life, obviously represent first and second degree, predecessor and successor. What I'm driving at is that all these terms, son and father, heir and ancestor, student and teacher, they are all only amplifications and ramifications of the one great problem: how does the truth get on? How do the directions of life continue to be followed? How does a historical humanity that began to speak 5,000 years BC or 7,000 years BC, you see, still speak the same language, Indo-European or Semitic? It's all one great language, after all, which we still carry on. You still say 1, 2, 3, 4. Why do you count? Why did people find it useful to speak as our ancestors? Because we need these numbers. They have done something for you and me, and you can't get out of speaking. You have to just continue to speak. Therefore, the people who make you learn your language are your parents. And we call anybody who makes us take up the direction of history our parents. And we owe them, as I said, religious gratitude, because we believe in their religious
dutifulness of telling us the best truth. You believe this too, that I'm now at this moment, although you may not dislike what I say, but you still believe that I'm trying to do my darndest, you see. Don't shoot the pianist, he's doing his darndest, you know.
Now, gentlemen, in the Old Testament, at the end, in the 24th book of the 24 books of the Old Testament, the prophet Malachi has a strange prediction. He says, the earth must be cursed and will perish unless the parents turn their hearts to their children and the children turn their hearts to their parents. And you know the New Testament is considered the fulfillment of the Old. And if you open it, however, you find a very strange distortion of this old text. Because in Luke, which is written 99 years ago, only the one half of the prophecy is fulfilled, declared to be fulfilled. When Jesus comes, he says that the hearts of the parents now are turned toward their children. But the other half, gentlemen, that the hearts of the children must be turned toward their parents, left to the Americans and to the newer generation to fulfill, even to understand its implications. What I'm trying to tell you about Henry James and William James, it goes back to a tremendous prophecy of the ancient people who felt that the greatest achievement of humanity would only come when the children would grow up in complete freedom. But not in the freedom of arbitrariness, not in the freedom of anarchy, but in the freedom that would lead them, what I've tried to show you already in the figure of Harry and William James to a certain extent, when the children would, after having been made sure of their independence, would turn back their hearts to their parents and begin to understand what these parents were trying to soil them to do, and would identify themselves, because when your heart turns to somebody, you understand him, you support him. Understand means to stand under his task and booth and don't knock knock what he's trying to do, then it becomes a part of your own task. Now it's very strange, gentlemen, that you have on this soil in America, in this strange family history, an anticipation of the last unfulfilled promise of the ancient peoples, because the Old Testament there only stands for that which all the natural people, the nations of the world, before they were well in one faith, always failed. The authority of the parents was so firmly established because it was taken for granted that the children would run away like the animals, young animals, and forget their ancestors. Now, in the long process of thousands of years, we feel so settled, and you feel so settled, that you think that you can forget your ancestors. Because they are so good to you. And so you say, Christianity is not unassailable. You don't know what you're saying by this. You just deny your whole background. All right. We do this, but with this criteria, sir, that you must listen to this great promise, after you have become independent and have denied everything, you will still have to look for the genius of the parents behind their authority. Deny my authority, my dear man. But don't deny the genius of all the nations and peoples, the generations that have lived before you. If you came as William James, you see, came to believe in the genius of his father, away with the final authority. That's all right, you see. You can say the authority is not unassailable. That the genius of the people who have created the world in which you live, that is unassailable. But we are waiting for you to appear. Thank you.